Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is your host, Teresa Banks, and I first want to start off by wishing you Windy City greetings from the Chicagoland area. We have outstanding weather today, which for the city of Chicago, unfortunately, can represent bad news, because typically when the weather is warm, the violence in Chicago increases. And that's actually my subject matter today. I want to talk to you about the violence against Chicago's youth. I'm sure, as a lot of you know, our city has taken on this national attention, even though the violence in our city has just grown worse. It seems to feel like year after year, we are just always at an alarming rate of youth violence that just constantly seems to be escalating. And it's so interesting to me, because a lot of the violence happens in our poor areas of Chicago. But I tell you, I'm one who grew up in a very poor neighborhood. And one thing about it is I didn't have the fear that a lot of the young people have today. And during those days, it was the years of the 60s and years of the 70s, and I was raised by my grandparents on the southeast side of the Chicagoland area. If you're familiar with the southeast side specifically, I grew up on 47th Street, like the area of the blues, the famous Met Theater. These were right up the street from my house, as well as the annual Bud Billiken Day Parade that happens before the kickoff of every school year. And I can remember during those days I could go outside and I could ride my bike and enjoy it with no problem all through the neighborhood. I could pull out my little rope and I could collect a couple of friends and pull them together and we all jump rope outside. I could also hopscotch. I could pull out some chalk and disfigure the ground and put my little round shapes in some areas, my little half-moon shapes, and in other areas I could put my little squares or rectangles and just hopscotch across the sidewalk. And then I could play various games outside with ease, like hide-and-go-seek, which was so much fun. And, of course, going to the playground and just relaxing as a kid and having few to no troubles at all. The one thing about it back in those days is that grown people, grown-ups, always showed concern for the lives of young people. They always made us feel like our lives had some kind of value to them. And whenever they talked to us, and they always talked to us, they talked to us about having a dream and telling us that when we grew up, we could become anything we wanted to be. And they would say these words even though in their own lives they didn't have as many opportunities. They felt that we could still have some hope. And even when they doubted, deep down, again, because they didn't have a lot of the opportunities, they still encouraged us, and they still told us that when we became older, rest our mind assured, if we applied ourselves, especially from an educational standpoint, that we would be just fine once we grew up. Now, on top of all of this encouragement, I do have to tell you, I have received my share of spankings in my lifetime, although I know that that's a controversial subject right now. It was something where parents had complete control. I mean, you feared parents. You didn't fear, like, the streets and the neighborhood, but you feared your parents and consequences anytime you did something wrong. You knew that they would hit you, or someone in the neighborhood, like a neighbor, would hit you and scold you. And they would grab all kinds of crazy things, anywhere from a belt around their waist or hanging off a chair to one of their shoes to branches. And some parents would actually have the kids go out and select various branches off the trees, and they would pull the leaves off of them and hit you with those. Some parents have used extension cords or ironing cords, really all kinds of paddles and things. And back in my day, when I was going to school, the teachers and the principals could also hit you as well. So there was always like this spanking fear, and it really kept kids in line a lot of the times. But again, we didn't feel the fear from the neighborhood. We knew that the neighbors and our family and our friends would protect us. And so we always had this in the back of our heads, even though they would spank us and discipline us. We know that deep down there was this care and this concern. And what was interesting about those days, too, is that our parents always knew our whereabouts. You know how today, in order for parents to know, whether it be a biological parent or guardian of any kind, they, after a certain age, kind of give in and get you a cell phone, usually when you're about 10 years old, if not sometimes younger, so they can track you down and know where you are and be able to reach you at all times. Well, back in the day, they didn't have cell phones, but they knew where we were. We were kind of timed as we went from place to place, and we wore a watch, and we were expected to be back. Or sometimes they just used the street lights, and they said, you can go out, you can have some fun, roam the neighborhood, but when those street lights come on, we expect you to be back in the house. And that was kind of their marker. But they knew where you were. And so that's really interesting compared to today. A lot of times, even with cell phones, you have a hard time tracking kids down. So I tell you, with that said, things have truly changed since those years compared to what our young people are dealing with today. As I talk with young people and as I see their actions and see what they're dealing with, a lot of them are growing up with fear. First of all, they are seeing and hearing everything. When I was growing up, a lot of things that were happening in the adult world, if you will, we were kind of oblivious to it. I mean, we actually had our grandparents or the adults around us, whether it be aunts or whomever, leave various rooms to have adult conversation or take it outside, go out on the porch, for example, to talk. So we were not exposed to so much. And, of course, we didn't have all the cable channels that the young people have today. And so now, as you talk with young people and you're around them, you see that they're exposed to so much more drinking, so much more drugging, cursing in the household, a lot of mental and physical abuse. And you also, as you talk with them in their teenage years, you see that a lot of them have had friends or family members that have been killed, especially violently and not necessarily due to a health issue. And it's just amazing. As you listen to them and you work with them in a school, an educational type setting, what our young people have been exposed to. I remember just a few months ago, I was presenting a junior achievement session at a school in Chicago Heights. It's a suburb of Illinois, and it's kind of like the south suburb of Illinois. And I'm in the classroom, and I was telling the young people about my past and that I had grew up with my grandparents, and I had mentioned that my biological mother had a mental illness. And, you know, the young people kind of soaked this in for a second, and then they actually asked me, what type of illness did she have? Was she schizophrenic? Was she bipolar? And it just shocked me because they were in third grade. They weren't in, like, high school. They weren't college-age kids. Third grade, they knew of mental illness and the various types of mental illness and what the types of behaviors were for them. And I had mentioned that she was bipolar, and some of them said, oh, okay, I know. You know, I was just taken aback because I was thinking to myself, wow, you know, all the things these kids are going through. I mean, of course, if you have someone who's mentally ill in your family, that's something you have to kind of deal with. But I was just surprised at the number of kids that knew about this and that knew to even ask such a question, what type of mental illness. And so I kind of concluded, really prior to that time, that kids are not sheltered or shielded in any way from the ill wills that are occurring in our world. Again, they're exposed to it from a television standpoint. They are exposed to it within their households, wherever they go in different places. And they're just tolerating things that are happening around them. And we as a people in this society, we are also tolerating what's going on as well. One of the most serious and most recent killings that has occurred a few weeks ago was with the Hadia Pendleton situation. And she was a young lady who had went during the inaugural presentation for the president, and I believe she was in a parade celebrating his reelection. And then just a short time later, when she came back home, she had been gunned down. And she was a brilliant student and looking forward to all that youth and her 20-something-year ages plus had to offer. And unfortunately, her life was cut short. And I recall hearing on the radio a WVON caller saying that we needed her to be killed in order for people to act. And I almost jumped through the radio. I started to call, but I know the time frame that you could just sit waiting on them to pick up sometimes. But I thought, what about the deaths of all the other kids that occurred before her? I mean, I had a girlfriend that lost her son to the streets. He was going to Simeon High School at the time. And I've had another girlfriend lose her grandson. And I've had a cousin who lost her son, all to the streets. All three of these young men, black men, lost due to the streets. Where was that man, that caller from WVON then? I mean, if he lives in the Chicagoland area, and perhaps he said that because he doesn't, or in really any major city, you see this violence all the time. Why should it take the national presentation of the killing of a young girl for people to feel now it's time to act? And, of course, with her killing, unfortunately, it was not the last. And with each killing, I keep saying to myself, bracing myself to see what will happen next and what will ultimately be the type of killing that's so insane that people have to act. And actually, a little bit after the death of Hadia Pendleton was the killing of an infant, just a few months old, in a car. And some people say that the father used the baby as a shield, and other people said that he was changing the baby's diaper and the baby happened to get hit. So I don't know what the facts of that case were, but we do know that the young infant died. And so when you look at all of this, all of these situations, all these different problems that are going on, these are problems that we as adults already know about that are resulting in violence against our young people. We already know that the drugs are out there and that they have existed for a while, and our young people are on these corners selling these drugs for one reason or another, a lot of times because unemployment is so rampant out there that they can't find another job anywhere else. We already know that guns are all over the streets. And we're hearing the National Rifle Association just talk and talk on and on how people have the right to carry them. But these guns, as we know, are being used for too much violence. And we also know already about the gangs and what they are doing in regards to the lives of our young people, the lives of adults that are in neighborhoods trying to raise a family. And we also know that people in these neighborhoods are uneducated and that it takes an educated people in order to make a difference. And so I think those of us that really do care about our young people and care about all this violence that's happening, not just in our city, but in other cities and other countries as well, we have to say, well, what are we doing to help? I mean, we have people that are on the radio, as I mentioned earlier, with WVON, that are talking on and on. And we have other people that are in various states that are marching and that are making the news and the headlines for their marching efforts. But I'd like to know, what are they doing regularly? I had said that I didn't call in that one particular time on WVON when that caller said, you know, now we should act after this one girl's killing. But I did call into a radio program recently when the host was talking about what is it that various organizations do, specifically fraternities and sororities, to help our young people. And I offered up some suggestions on that day, and I also mentioned, as I'm saying here, that people have talked enough, really, in my opinion, and have marched enough, really, and that they should be acting. They should be doing something. In the Chicagoland area, I know I, for one, participate in CHAOS, which actually stands for the Chicago Area Origami Society, Chicago Area Origami Society. And with that organization, groups of kids come together with groups of adults, and we help them fold little animals and little boxes. And origami is a Japanese art form of paper folding. And so it's a way to keep the kids off the streets and to give back to them. And I said a few minutes ago, I participate in Junior Achievement, which I do. I've done that now for well over 10-plus years, and I have no kids. And every time I go to these groups and these organizations, I spend time talking with the young people, reminding them of how smart they really are, and asking them what it is they want to be when they get older, and sharing with them the importance of staying in school. And I think that we all need to actually do that. Unfortunately, as we do this, in between time, I think that kids are going to continue to be killed because more of us are not taking the proper stand. We need to take a vested interest and helping our young people, if we're even able to make the tiniest of dents in what's going on with all of this violence. We have to take more of a vested interest. Now, one thing I understand, especially having grown up in Chicago and lived on the South Side, is this whole issue in regards to retaliation. I know that it's very real when you on your block know of various crimes that are being committed, whether it be by our young people or others, and at the same time you feel uncomfortable reporting it because you're concerned that your family may become victimized if you tell, you're worried that something may happen to your child, for example, and so you're asking yourself maybe you should just move. Perhaps moving is the way out because you feel so helpless. Everything in regards to this violent situation feels so big, seems so big, and I tell you the truth, seems so completely out of control. But we as a people have to be careful in letting fear paralyze us. We have to consider what's going on with the children so that all of this violence doesn't become the everyday norm. So I highly encourage all of you that are listening and all of you that are under the sound of my voice and that you circulate this message throughout your families, your friends, everybody that you meet, that we have to continue to volunteer and talk with our young people and help prepare them for the future, because they are next. They are the next doctor, the next dentist, the next lawyer, the next teacher, airline pilot, whatever. Talk to your children. Get your household in order. And talk to every child that you come across. Act as if you're their parent. Give them some kind of adult guidance, because that's what a lot of our young people are missing. They have no guidance. They're just wandering around like zombies, doing whatever they think they're big enough to do, and feeling that there are no consequences in which they're doing it. Reach out if you are a family with kids or have relatives that are wild and out. Reach out and get the help that's needed. Because these family issues are certainly affecting kids. Family issues that may include poverty, debt, unemployment, whatever you as a family may be going through. So reach out to get the help that's needed, especially so that various cycles will be ended. Cycles that could include teenage pregnancy. I can't tell you the number of girls in my own family that have been pregnant as teenagers, and a lot of the struggles they face today and impoverished situations they've been in for years. And then kids that are fatherless. The dad's just taking over as if it's okay to plant the sperm and then to leave. And the truth is, it's not okay. It is never okay that they should do something in order to help out. And I mentioned before this mental abuse and physical abuse. There's always a question on whether or not children should be spanked. I believe some type of discipline has to be instilled. I'll leave it to you, for your household, your kids. I don't have any children, to decide if spanking is the way or standing them in a corner, whatever. But they need some type of discipline so that they can certainly do better. And then I said fatherless kids, but there are motherless kids that are out there as well. Children that have no relationship with their mom, don't know where mother is or what she's up to, who's not assisting the family. We have situations of cycles repeating where children are not being educated. And of course, we know today the price of an education is insane. I talked to a cousin recently who was sharing that even if you have a student who is a straight A student, awesome scholar, will get a scholarship, but a lot of times it won't include everything, full tuition. It might be for a couple of years, which is just outrageous, because it winds up meaning that now you out of pocket have to spend all of this money to put your kid through school. But then without the education, they're stuck in not getting the kind of job that they need to get. So I think regardless of the expense, we have to work our way through the expense one way or another. Our young people need to know that they need a good education. And then the other cycles that are out there in regards to doing drugs and drinking and smoking, those all need to be totally eliminated so that our young people are taking better care of themselves, not taking drugs or selling drugs, not drinking and getting high off of alcohol, not wasting so much money and time and energy into smoking. And then last but certainly not least, in regards to our personal health, whether it be through obesity or anything in regards to our bodies, not exercising well. I know I can be guilty of that myself, not exercising well, not eating well. We need to get in tune with ourselves so that we can help our young people and not repeat the cycle of not taking care of ourselves. So I hope that this conversation today overall has been beneficial, because it really worries me and concerns me that we have so many young people that are facing violent situations every day, that have to ride buses, whether it be school buses or other commuter buses or trains back and forth, that are worried if they're going to make it from point A to B. I'm concerned that a lot of the schools in our Chicagoland area will be closing and that kids have to try and make it to school, and the school administrators are saying, oh, we're going to establish a safe passage. I hope they do really establish that safe passage. But more so, I hope that we as caring adults that really do sincerely care about young people and their well-being, whether we have a young student that's doing well or one that's struggling and needs help, that we will do better to try and guide their lives and give them positive things to do and look forward to. And that even though we may not have had some of the different things we needed as kids, that we will stretch ourselves and extend our arms and our hands, our knowledge, our experience, to make their lives even better. With that said, I am going to wrap up today's program. I have some other interesting shows I want to do for you, and topics and subject matters that I hope will hit close to the heart. I want to thank those of you that have always dropped me an email, as long as I've done this program, just to say hello or give words of encouragement and feedback. I appreciate you. Thank you to those that have called me as well and left me a cell phone message or talked to me directly. I want to remind all of you to swing by Amazon.com and pick up all four of my books: Woman of Integrity, Becoming a Published Author, Barrenhood, and Surviving a Layoff, and I'm still working on book number 5, while at the same time trying to decide if it's going to be created through as an e-book or not, or created electronically as opposed to some of the old methods that I've used. So I'm still kicking that around. I'll keep you posted. And then I want to thank those of you that have supported me in various events I've been to lately that have included my new line of jewelry. And the next event I will be doing will be at the Woodson Library, 9 o'clock a.m. sharp, on 95th and Halsted in the Chicagoland area on June the 1st. Make sure you mark your calendars, because I would absolutely love to see you. I thank you all for your support. I will be praying for our young people, and I hope that we will do something to make a difference. Take care, be well, happy, happy, happy Mother's Day next week, Sunday, coming up. May you be blessed on that day and every day to all mothers and to all of you listening. Take care.